I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Merry Christmas to those who celebrate, and happy day off work to those who do not celebrate Christmas. It's kind of a win-win for everybody in the gang here tuning in. And we hope that you have had a lovely day. We hope that you are getting some R&R, some rest and relaxation. And we hope that you are ready for some very, very strange news. There's a lot of stuff afoot. We're going to hopefully, we didn't talk about this before we record, but I'm thinking we can maybe end on a positive note in the spirit of getting so close to surviving 2023, which has been just like a constant Shyamalan plot twist after another. We're going to learn about the Red Sea in a weird way. We're going to learn about some sea animals in a pretty exciting way. But before we do any of that, we have to acknowledge something that is part of a continuing larger phenomenon: cyber attacks, hacks. Ooh, shout out to anybody who's an Xfinity customer or Comcast or whatever they're going as now. But some big news just broke, and it affects a lot of people.
Yeah, last time on the show, you may remember, if you were a 23andMe customer, all your stuff got hacked. Remember that? That just happened. Well, it turns out back in October, another pretty big institution got hacked. It's a thing called NationStar Mortgage, which changed its name to Mr. Cooper a couple of years back.
Really? Hanging with?
Yeah, it's like,
D.B.
it's like
Cooper.
That. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's more innocuous. It's one of those rebranding plays, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, if they're a mortgage company. They are actually the people that I used to have a mortgage with when I owned a house previously. It's very weird to go to their website and pay Mr. Cooper all that money that you owe him.
It's an approachable corporation. Now you got a name, you know. I hope, Matt, do they have like a logo, like a face logo, like some guy in a, you know, a Honda Civic version of a suit who's just kind of smiling?
I only ever saw their logo that was just a very small MR dot Cooper, and it was all lowercase.
Mr. Cooper. He just wants all your money.
Well, he wants more of your money too, depending on the interest rate, right?
Oh yeah, and more and more nowadays. Well, so back right around Halloween, Mr. Cooper said that it had been attacked. They noticed some weird stuff on their servers, and they're like, "Oh, what's going on with that? We don't know." But they had to do the same thing 23andMe did, where they have to report it to the SEC. hey, there may have been some kind of data breach. We're not really sure. We're assessing it. We'll see what's going on. So that made news in early November of this year that that had occurred, right? A regulatory filing that they had to put forward. That kind of made the news. I mean, it did. It showed up in places like the New York Times that something occurred because, again, like 23andMe, this is a big company. There's lots of investors in this company. It's a big deal. When something like this occurs, it can affect share price and how the company performs. Well, as of December 18th, the reporting has changed quite a bit. It wasn't just a few people got affected by this thing. It was around 14 million users.
Whoa.
Got affected. And guys, let me just jump here to my notes from this ABC News article written by Luke Barr on December 18th, 2023. According to the official information coming from Mr. Cooper now, this cyber breach involved, quote, substantially all of our current and former customers. And it was their sensitive personal information. Here we go. The personal information in the impacted files include your name, address, phone number, social security number, date of birth, and bank account number, unquote.
Can I just say the whole former thing?
Yes.
Really gives me pause because you think that you're out, but there's always stuff floating around.
Nope. My name, all of my information's in there, guys. So I don't know about anyone else listening to this or finding out about this news, but I'm going to have to take some steps just for my own, you know, sense of well-being, whether or not this information is out there and being sold to somebody. That's also part of this story. So as a part of the steps that Mr. Cooper has to take now that they've realized how big this hack was, they are going to spend, I think, around $20 to $25 million to mitigate this stuff, to monitor the dark web and see if this information or, you know, this batch of information is getting sold somewhere. They are also providing 2 years of that kind of monitoring that we've, you know, had on this show before with, like, what's it called?
Norton LifeLock
or LifeLock by Norton. They're going to provide that for everybody affected for 2 years, at least according
to their statement. They can't protect against all identity theft.
We are required to point that out. But also, $25 million seems like a pretty low blood price to pay for this, because what you've just described here, Matt, and there are other very similar cyber attacks. We can talk about two later. But what you've described is the dream ingredient list for identity theft. It's all the stuff you need, except like you don't need the routing number because bank routing numbers are public information. So now you can do any number of things. I think you're right, man. I think it's time to freeze the credit. I think also any financial boffin will readily tell you, tell all of us that we are supposed to have our credit at a freeze,
yeah,
and only unlock it when we're doing stuff and then lock it right back up, just like how you close the refrigerator when you take out the leftover quesadilla.
I can't see a really good reason to not function that way, Ben. And I currently don't function that way all the time. And it's often one of those things, I think, meant for many of us, you're just not thinking about freezing your credit, right? It is like accidentally, you're right, Ben. It's like accidentally leaving the door open, right? We need to just do that. So let's all try it. Let's give it a try. I know it's one of the things that's on the top of my list to get done right now. Just freeze everything, make sure we're good. And honestly, get a new account number. Because if my bank account number is rolling around out there, I don't really like that. I don't like that at all, actually.
What? No way.
Yeah. So there's a lot more you can read about this from The Register. Some great writing by Jessica Hardcastle over there also came out on December 18th. It's discussing more of, like, basically how they're responding to this. So I guess the other question is, what do we do, right? We've talked about maybe potential actions you can take independently. Can you reach out to Mr. Cooper directly? Well, according to some writing in the New York Times by Stacey Cowley, C-O-W-L-E-Y, from November 7th, Mr. Cooper had set up a website to provide information to anybody who has been affected. It also says, at least according to Stacey, that they are, quote, truly sorry. because there were actually network disruptions back in November, guys, where people who were trying to pay their mortgage bills couldn't pay them because the website for Mr. Cooper, the portal, I guess, that you use to go in and pay, wasn't functioning because they were, at least according to Mr. Cooper, they shut down portions of their servers that were affected, right? And some of those portions also had to do with their website and how it functions, which is not great for users.
Mm-mm. Nope.
But on this New York Times piece by Stacy Cowley, there's a link to a website. But I don't know about you guys. I'm clicking that website. It's incident.mrcooperinfo.com. And I'm not seeing anything pull up.
It's like kind of log jamming.
We were talking about this off air. Yeah, I tried to go to the website as well. By the way, that's Mr. Cooper, so not Mr. spelled out. And it's not loading for any of us. If you go to the Mr. Cooper website, that works. That part
that's
works.
Good.
They'll gladly sell you a home or help you refinance. But the help center appears to still be up. You can get their mailing address since no one sends letters anymore. Those things do have an impact, I think. But it's curious. It's the worst time for their website to go down. And I just got the, right now, we're cooking live. I just got the, this site can't be reached message.
Me too.
Trying to go a couple times.
Okay. Just now.
Unanimous then. They must be tuning in. Nice to hear from you, Mr. C. Matt, is this not indicative of, like, I don't know if I have confirmation bias or if I'm just seeing the things I'm looking for, but doesn't it seem like there are more cyber attacks happening now? Like Sony just had that massive hack.
Mm-hmm. MGM.
MGM just had a massive hack. Yeah. And then there was another one I can't remember. It's like, it's getting tough to keep track of all of them. Oh, Xfinity. We mentioned it at the beginning. Yeah. 36 million people. This is a little bit different though, because of the degree of information that has been spilled. And for anybody who doesn't know, could you maybe walk us through like how these hackers profit from this? Because these guys are selling it, right? Or attempting to.
If they were able to sell it to a third party or third parties, often this information gets stolen in bulk, then basically packaged so that it can be sold to other countries. So probably non-state actors in other countries, I would imagine, just on, again, the dark web somewhere. Once those people have it, the most common thing for this type of identity theft information is for it to be used to open credit lines or lines of credit in other people's identities, basically. And it's very weird because you can take those lines of credit and go to places like Vegas. And then you can go gamble a bunch of money with somebody else's credit line that you've created. And then if you get any cash winnings, you just take it and run. Or quietly, calmly exit the building as to not raise suspicion. It's really scary because you can also do things like go and buy a bunch of like store credit
gift
somewhere.
Gift cards. Mm-hmm. And the oldest grift in the book is like, you know, stealing things and then returning it to another store and getting, you know, store credit, because a lot of places are pretty lax about receipts. There's any number of ways to incorporate that sort of more old school grift into what you're talking about here.
You can also use this to secure a short-term loan and then use that loan to make a purchase of a large thing like a house and then sell the house very quickly for a profit. So there are multiple avenues of advantage here to this con. And it's actually the thing that I think is likewise frightening is it's not tough to get away with this. It's not like faking your death. Faking your death is very difficult, but doing a grift like this with someone else's identity, you can get away, and people do every year.
Yep. Buying cars is another big thing. I've personally seen that happen in my life. It is really just a creepy thing. So just keep a lookout for more of these types of data breaches. Make sure when your stuff is in one of them as in, I think a few of us might have gotten caught up in the Xfinity thing. That thing, it's fine. Just smile and move on, but take actions to protect yourself.
I did have a fraud situation where I had like a very unusual charge on my bank account. Just FYI, and for a little bit of, you know, protect yourself. It was tied to Apple Pay, which is, you know, obviously you can get Apple credit, but I have my debit card, you know, in my Apple wallet. And if you ever lazily sign up for a service using your Apple Pay or your Apple wallet, they forever have that link to your card.
Right.
And I don't know what this thing was, but I literally had to remove my card from my Apple wallet and manually add it back in. And I reported the charge and I was able to get it reversed, but that was sort of an eye opener for me.
I would strongly suggest, I'm not a expert, thankfully, in these sorts of shenanigans, but I would strongly suggest the following, which I have found to be advantageous. If you are interacting with one of those digital payment hubs like an Amazon, a subscription service, an Apple Pay, PlayStation, Xbox Store, etc., have some kind of credit card, if possible, if you have the wherewithal, that you only use for that. Do not attach it to your debit card, because it's much easier to get things repaired when you have a credit card. So like, for instance, and it'll help your credit score too. That crazy Byzantine arbitrary bullshit that we all have to participate in the United States, right? And many other countries, obviously, to be fair.
Gotta get a good score or you're worthless to us.
Send me credit.
America.
Oh, which is also on the way. I didn't tell you guys. I hung out with, on a previous evening, I went and hung out with some pretty cool guys from the United Kingdom. They do a show called High on Homegrown. I've never learned their real names. I don't know what they look like. They are professional growers of things. And they were talking about this, exactly what we're talking about. They were talking about the tricky world of digital payments and a bit of the grifting that can occur. And they're like us. They're very anti-grifting.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, they weren't like, this is great.
I got another random Cash App card in the mail. Somebody named like Johnny Cash 69. Like, how? Why? Why? Anyway, all right, y'all. We'll be right back with more strange news, but protect your wallet.
Neck. Protect your check.
Yes. Yeah. Protect your check.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpert.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. the hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with another piece of strange news. This is a fun one. We've talked a lot about the whole war against humans that's happening seemingly in the animal kingdom. You know, you got your orcas trying to capsize boats, all of that good stuff. Well, now it seems that the war against humans has taken an interesting evolutionary turn. We always talk about how one of the superpowers of being a human is our opposable thumbs. It allows us to grip things in certain ways and also, you know, show that we're pleased or displeased with something. But it's something that typically most members of the cetacean kingdom, or most cetaceans, do not have. They have flippers. We know that dolphins are very, very intelligent. They've been studied in terms of their ability to communicate with each other and their vast intellect. They've often been featured in science fiction. Of course, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you know, presents them as sort of the most intelligent creatures on Earth. Or actually, I believe, Ben, maybe, you know, aren't they like aliens, kind of? They're meant to be seen as aliens, and they're the
In Hitchhiker's Guide? Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. They're the benevolent, better life form. And they get word that Earth is going to be destroyed. And so they bid people a very nice, very warm, but firm goodbye by
thanks
saying so
fish.
Long and yeah. Thanks for all the fish.
That's right. It turns out, whether this is an evolutionary thing that's going to take or not, marine biologists studying the Gulf of Corinth, which is near Greece, recently discovered a dolphin, one in particular, an individual, that has, let's just call it developed thumbs. What it really looks a lot more like, which honestly is pretty awesome in and of itself, is both fins kind of resemble like a bottle opener. You know, where you have the little hook at the bottom and then the long piece, and you use that to pop the cap off of your, you know, tasty beverage. That's what they observed. Researchers spotted this very strange dolphin twice this past summer while doing some surveys near Greece. And there's a great article in All That Is Interesting by Kalina Fraga that describes the whole thing using some citations from USA Today as well. In fact, let's just do a quote here. One of the researchers named Alexandros Francis, who is the scientific coordinator and president of the Pelagos Cetacean Research Institute, spoke to Live Science, and I believe maybe the Live Science quote was also reprinted in USA Today, saying that the dolphin was seen swimming, leaping, bow riding and playing, and seemed perfectly capable of keeping up with the pod despite this unusual adaptation. Now, we talked about this a lot. Sometimes, you know, a mutation can be not advantageous, but it's when it becomes advantageous that it maybe in a long enough timeline becomes an evolution. It's way too early to discuss whether that's the case here or not. It does appear that this is what you might consider a deformity, you know, within this the cetacean group. But if it proves to be advantageous, you know, given conditions, perhaps it could become an evolution, you know. Let's see. There's another really good quote here from USA Today. Francis says, "The fact that this irregularity is found in both flippers of the dolphin and no injuries or skin lesions are present explains why this could not be an illness, but an expression of very rare genes."
This is exciting.
Kind of exciting / terrifying.
No, we need to make sure this particular dolphin is out there breeding like crazy. We need more dolphins with thumbs. I'm into this.
Francis says that this could well be the result of constant inbreeding, which, you know, inherently isn't a good thing and usually does generate genetic irregularities that are not good. But in this case, it's kind of a, it seems like it might be a leg up or a thumb up. I don't know. What do you guys think? Yeah, well, let me add one more little detail here. During a dolphin's development, the article says, in the womb, these fingers, I guess, are surrounded by cells, and these cells merge together to create this contiguous flipper or, you know, paddle-like appendage. The space or the cells between the fingers, which I guess is what it looks like as they're developing, die off prior to birth. But in this situation, that doesn't seem to have happened. And another researcher, Lisa Noel Cooper, told Life Science, and she is from the Northwest Ohio Medical University, it looks to me like the cells that normally would have formed the equivalent of our index and middle fingers died off in a strange event when the flipper was forming while the calf was still in the womb. It's pretty wild, man. This dolphin was one of 1,300 striped dolphins known as Stenella coralloalba. And they exist, you know, there in the Gulf of Corinth, and they are in fact isolated from a lot of other dolphins in the Mediterranean. So they are the subject of a lot of observation from that Pelagos Cetacean Research Institute since as far back as 1995.
We don't know if it's environmentally dependent aberration or whether it is, to your point, genetic or inbreeding, but it could also be atavism. You know, because the ancestors of dolphins were four-legged land mammals, and they eventually returned to the ocean, right? So there's a number of factors that it could be. And if I'm aware, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Noel, I think the dolphin has been sighted, but has not been, like, it's weird to say it this way, apprehended
and studied. Or, yes,
like, there's no DNA test. And until there is further investigation, the humans aren't going to know whether this is a one-off thing that was due to environmental factors, the way that other maritime life might be exposed to human-created contaminants that mess up their development. We don't know whether the dolphin has tried to grab anything. We don't know whether it's a genetic precedent that could lead to more breeding. But usually in these cases, quite often, those sorts of mutations will tend to be one-off or recessive traits. So you got to find the other thumbed dolphin, bro, if you're tuning in, if you're listening.
Well, and again, I think it would require some conditional situation that would make such a mutation super advantageous to the point where it would kill off other individuals, you know, in the group that don't have that. That's, to my understanding, my very rough understanding of evolution, that's kind of how it works, you know, on a long timeline. Like, a mutation happens, it's kind of random, but then the ones that sort of, you know, rise to the top are because all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, or over time, conditions make that a really good trait to have. And the ones that don't have that trait are at a disadvantage. Therefore, the ones that have it are the ones that carry on and continue to breed. And, you know, therefore the evolutionary trait kicks in. There is one last quote I want to read from Cooper, the Ohio researcher, I believe. The hook, to your point about grabbing things, Ben, the hook-shaped thumb may have some bone inside it, but it certainly isn't mobile. No cetaceans have mobile thumbs. So while
far,
it's a very interesting kind of buzzy thing to talk about, we don't have dolphins yet that can, like, operate a doorknob.
Did we talk about, why would they? That's a dolphin steez, right?
But it's true.
We know dolphins are able to improvise tools, right? They are.
Sure.
They have that level of intelligence. And did we mention, you mentioned they're striped dolphins. Did we talk about, like you said, they're isolated. There's a line in one of the articles you shared with us, Noel, that says you have to put these dolphins in perspective to the larger dolphin population. And the quote goes, "To put this pod in perspective, the genetic distance between these dolphins and other, like, quote unquote, common dolphins," dolphins, don't get offended. If you're listening, you're all amazing. They say the genetic distance is like if humans lived in a mixed species society with chimpanzees and gorillas.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that's
a big deal.
That's like, further, that's more of a distance than I had imagined. I outside of like the Yangtze dolphins in China, I had always just thought, yeah, dolphins, you know, they might have some differences, but they're more or less on the same vibe. And this appears not to be the case.
Does. I don't know, Matt, any final thoughts here? I think I've said all I have to say about this one. It's super interesting.
Well, I just wonder if it's a Toy Story situation where dolphins won't let us observe them when they're using their thumbs. You know, sure. They know when we're watching, but they're down there. Look, it's a water planet, guys. And these dolphins are pretty dang smart.
They sure are.
I don't know.
Well, like I said, at the very least, even if they're not prehensile, I guess they could serve as sort of a bottle opener type fulcrum. You know, if there are bones and they're rigid enough, speaking of improvising tools, this would be another type of tool that could be used, I guess, in theory. But I'm no dolphin scientist here. But yeah.
Well, just weirdly enough, I noticed from the pictures, the hook part is, I would categorize it as the hook is facing backwards.
That's mm-hmm. true.
So
it wouldn't be as useful as a bottle opener. You're totally right.
Well, right, but we're thinking in terms of human tools. Let's keep that in mind.
That's well. Yeah, well, I'm thinking in terms of being able to hook something onto the dolphin as it travels forward, which is generally the way the dolphin travels, right? Uh-huh. Because that could be extremely helpful in some instances,
saying.
Right?
Sure. I see what you're saying.
Imagine to clear away some netting or something that's mm-hmm. in the way that's blocking other dolphins in their pod.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You're really thinking big on this one, Matt. That's a good point because we know that dolphins are often, you know, the victim of getting tangled up in human garbage, like what do they call those plastic rings that cans come in and things like that, or netting designed for tuna or other fish. This could potentially allow these dolphins to like rescue others or like free themselves. That's a really good point.
Theoretically, but not in this particular dolphin. I don't. Well, maybe I'm just.
Depends on how rigid it is, right? I guess.
But the hook is kind of backwards for those purposes, right? I mean, just at least what I'm seeing here. It would be difficult unless it moved in a different way.
It is really interestingly hooked, though. The little, like, it is a perfect little lip on this thing that we're looking at. It's very interesting.
And it was just sighted twice last summer. So
that's right.
Don't know the whereabouts of this current dolphin now. We don't know how these formations occurred. It reminds me of the conversation about mutation. Additionally, in the world of evolution, if a mutation does not, it doesn't have to help the creature to continue. It just has to not harm the creature in a relative way and not impede reproduction. So it kind of reminds me about how humans developed blue eyes. You trace it back and there's like one person in the ancient days of modern day Estonia had blue eyes. They were probably advantageous because, you know, they were pretty or whatever and managed not to be burned for witchcraft. But that mutation successfully spread and then occurred in other parts of the world. I would be very interested in just learning more about this dolphin because we have to realize all maritime flora and fauna is under intense danger right now, right? From a number of reasons, including ocean acidification and so on. These dolphins were apparently stranded along the coast of Greece for like 30 years, according to Alexandros Frantis.
Jeez, I didn't catch that part. And no, and that's also kind of therein lies the, I guess, sort of gallows humory joke about the idea that the animal kingdom is coming for us, in particular the maritime ones. I think that's what's made most of the headlines, is like these orcas trying to, you know, capsize fishing vessels. And that's, you know, even the film Orca, you know, which is sort of a ripoff of Jaws, is very much about that, or the idea of Moby Dick, you know, targeting and coming after Captain Ahab. So yeah, you're absolutely right. They really are under serious threat, and perhaps that serious threat could be enough of a environmental threat that could cause evolutionary traits, you know, to accelerate, perhaps. I don't know. What do you say we take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then come back with one more piece of strange news?
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned. Let's stay in the world of all things oceanic, and let's get into it this way with the talk of a continual hobby horse of mine. I think all of us, who gets to name military operations? Who is the person who has the job where they say, you know what, let's call it Mockingbird? And someone's like, ooh, let's call it Operation Red Beam. And someone goes, no, Blue Beam. And they're like, damn, you're good at this.
Or if it's outsourced, it ends up being called Bodie McBoatface, right? Wasn't that a military vessel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was crowdsourcing the name of military vessel. I'd like to introduce all of us to one of the hottest new things in the Red Sea, Operation Prosperity Guardian. Your old pal, Uncle Sam, and allies are officially protecting ships in the Red Sea from Houthi, Iranian attacks. This is something that is going to be incredibly important later, and indeed, it's going to lead to some dangerous outcomes. Here's what happened. This happened quite recently, December 2023, as we are recording this. The Houthi group is a proxy military of Iran, and they are fighting in Yemen. They have been launching drone attacks and firing things at private shipping vessels going through the Strait of Hormuz and the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aden, and so on. The United States reacted to this finally. The Secretary of Defense, as we record, Lloyd Austin, said we're forming an international maritime security force. Who's in this weird Justice League? The United Kingdom, Bahrain, Canada, France, Italy, Netherlands, Norway, Seychelles, and Spain. And then also some partners who asked not to be named, which, yeah, a bit of a flag there.
Sure.
Not my favorite flag. And so this has set the world, the international relations world, abuzz. This also comes on the heels of the newly revealed information of the conversation between everybody's favorite uncle, Uncle Xi, and U.S. President Biden, wherein Xi basically told Joe, look, I'm going to get Taiwan, dude. I'm going to get Taiwan. I don't have a timeline on it. I'm a busy guy, but I'm going to get it.
It will be mine. Oh, yeah. Yes. It will be mine. Like Wayne's World with the guitar.
Yeah, Xi probably, obviously heard our episode on semiconductors and chips. So I guess he needed to make that statement. What we're seeing is things are becoming increasingly unstable. Unstable. The Houthi forces have been launching these attacks for quite some time. This is not new beans. Weird time to make a community quote, but shout out to anybody who got that reference.
Well, old beans is your thing, so this is new beans.
Yeah, new beans is the social approval app episode of Community with a nice appearance from Tim and Eric. So the Houthis have been fighting the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in Yemen since 2015 officially. And because of the complex web of relationships between Saudi Arabia and the West, vivisected journalists notwithstanding, the U.S. and Europe typically are going to side with Saudi Arabia in these things and supply them with infrastructure, military training, all the evil toys of war. This is an escalation. This means that the U.S. is now verging closer and closer to what we would call a hot war, an active conflict. And if this, depending on how Operation Prosperity Guardian goes, great name, guys, depending on how this goes, we may be looking at a situation that escalates quite quickly. It's dangerous stuff, and it's dangerous water. We don't know what the consequences will be, but we know the West needs to do a better job reporting on it.
Well, whose prosperity is being guarded is the question.
The prosperity being guarded would be that of private and state-sponsored shipping vessels. Companies that own those or the companies that profit from the resources those things transport.
I'm reading through this AP News article you shared with us, Ben, just trying to like understand it as much as I can. The pushback is pretty intense from other countries who are, you know, support of countries in the area other than Israel.
I mean, this is a global choke point. It doesn't matter where you live. The economic activity in the Red Sea affects you, kind of like the Strait of Malacca, right? Which is the reason Singapore has encountered such prosperity. Right now, at any point in time, there are somewhere around 400 commercial vessels going through this tiny little part of the Red Sea. I want to shout out Tara Kopp and Lolita C. Baldor over at AP News for the information here. Like you said, they're catching heat because of the U.S.'s relationship with Israel. And indeed, it's quite possible that they have more Middle Eastern partners than just Bahrain. But those Middle Eastern states want to stay anonymous because they can't take the heat of being affiliated with something that might be in support of Israel. It's a weird game where everybody has these contradictory interests, these unrelated interests, and everybody has agreed, at least in Operation Prosperity Guardian, everyone has agreed that their interests align on one goal, which is to keep the fossil fuel resources flowing through the Red Sea. And as we know, when wars actually happen, it's not a matter of ideology. It might be dressed up as that. It might sound good in political speeches and in military monologues, but wars are always about resources. So if you want to see where a war might start, you have to look at stuff like this. And I'm just baffled that so much stuff goes through this. 15% of the goods that go into Europe and the Middle East and North Africa go from the Gulf and from Asia via sea. And then that's like more than 20% of refined oil, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot on the line. I don't know. I wanted to ask you guys, in terms of this kind of stuff, am I crazy for thinking of things like how Operation Desert Fox turned into Desert Shield and then escalated into the Iraq War? Like, is that alarmist?
I don't think so at all. No, I don't think you're far off the mark at all.
It's just so weird because when we can look back at something like that, right? It does appear that there are direct American interests at play.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if you could point to them directly right now in this, you know, what are the American interests outside of just protecting Israel as one of the primary goals, right? As a primary ally. Are there any other interests that America's playing here besides just securing trade?
Yeah, the domestic economy. Securing trade is one of the big things because it's like, picture the in the world overall. We've got to picture the United States somewhat like Rust Cole in True Detective. Bad men who keep the other bad men from the door. As the world's current hegemon, the U.S. has force projection that no other countries are capable of or willing to match. And a great deal of U.S. activity abroad, in theory, is meant to ensure global trade stability. That's like all they're saying they're doing, even when they get up to some shenanigans, which we hear about pretty often from our fellow conspiracy realists. There are big international companies that have a lot of heft in the United States, like BP, British Petroleum, but they're super deep in the States. They said they're going to pause all oil shipments through the Red Sea due to the deteriorating security in the region. And that is huge, not just for the U.S., not just for the United Kingdom, but, you know, countries that use fossil fuels, which is
all of them.
Yeah, pretty much most of them. You know,
I can't help but hear the name of this operation and think about the idea of prosperity theology or prosperity gospel. Mm. It's sort of almost like a buzz term that usually doesn't mean what you think it means, or it's sort of like inherently a bit of a grift. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like getting triggered by that term. But do you have any thoughts around that? The meaning behind the name?
You know, I've got some speculation. I want to say they're just guarding prosperity, right? the name, at least, we're talking about this bit off air, the name at least feels a little more transparent than names of operations in the past, but it's also clearly marketed to be a name that everyone can agree with, right? Like, you're not going to sign up. What, you don't guard prosperity? What are you?
It seems like a no duh kind of. Of course, we should do that. Everyone needs to prosper, right? Why would we not want to protect that?
China said good luck. They're not participating, by the way.
Ah,
just had to add that part in there.
Well, that's very telling, isn't it?
I mean, it feels like it, but we also have to be careful not to, you know, read tea leaves or make connections that we cannot prove. But yeah, it does feel indicative of a larger process or phenomenon. Also, for the Houthi side, they issued a statement and they said, look, we'll destroy the coalition fleet. You guys will love this quote. They said, the Red Sea will be your graveyard. So they're super not chill about this.
I mean, the Red Sea, I've always found to already have a pretty ominous name, you know, like Sea of Blood.
Mm-hmm. But we know that won't be true, right? The naval might that we're talking about here is intense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's often easy for people who live in the U.S. have not seen the exercise of U.S. military acumen. It's easy to forget that they can and will rain fire, right?
Yeah.
The only thing stopping them is international norms.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. International norms and then consequences with your neighbors. Right. So you've got to attempt to go through institutions like the UN. The Biden administration already wrote to the UN Security Council and said, hey, can the UN send somebody in to stop these attacks? And the UN said, hey, maybe we'll form a committee to see about setting up a meeting or something. And then the United States said, yeah, hold my beer.
Yeah.
I think it is worrying, though, because we're talking about air, land, and sea force projection. And what gets lost in these conversations about business, about global stability, about the status quo, is that the people of Yemen have been fucking massacred for years, and it didn't matter who was president in the U.S., and it didn't matter, honestly, I don't want to sound cynical, it didn't matter who you voted for. Those bombs kept falling.
We don't really do humanitarian stuff unless it benefits us financially, you know? I mean, I'm sorry. That's just the truth, you know? I mean, even intervention, you know, against the Nazis took ages. And it wasn't until it was like we couldn't not do it. Like, public opinion would not allow us to not intervene. We would have been on the wrong side of history. These conversations were had, you know? It's like, ooh, I guess we got to do it, you know? Or it's going to create this problem that we will have to deal with down the line, you know? It's all very self-serving, man. It's so self-serving.
It took a Pearl Harbor to galvanize the isolationist American public into World War II. It took a 9/11 to gather public support of interventions or continuing escalating interventions in Iraq. I mean, I don't know.
And that was the meal ticket, 9/11, you know, just to like, okay, now we will be interventionist, but behind the guise of this world police situation where we're the good guys, because that sort of like created that persona. But that's not really what we're doing.
Yeah. And tune in. We've got some episodes about stuff like that on the way, folks. It's deep water. I guess in defense of the Chinese government's calculus, what would China gain from becoming involved in this? If you already have a group of people who say, we'll do these dirty dishes, do you need to go to the sink too? Or are you just, I mean, like, what, to the question about cost benefit, what is to be gained from this? I don't know. It's tricky.
It is super tricky. Yeah. And or, icky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tricky, icky. Yeah.
I want us to hear from fellow conspiracy realists who have experience in the Red Sea. Want to hear your thoughts on Operation Prosperity Guardian. Like, it, in general, the idea that the like these ships should not be fired upon, that makes sense.
Sure.
The people working there aren't trying to overthrow a government. They're just trying to, like, finish out their tour and then maybe get home and eat somewhere that isn't a boat. You know what I mean? I get that. The people, the civilian population of Yemen is just saying, hey, don't, you know, please stop dropping bombs on us. You know, like, this kind of stuff, it happens increasingly, just like the cyber attacks we talked about at the top of this show. Like, it's becoming normalized, and that normalization is dangerous. So tell us what you think. Tell us what you think is next. Tell us whether you think there is a hidden hand or some other calculus that's not making the news. We did say we would try to end on one positive thing. And
I have another positive thing, if I could. But
You go first.
Okay, just really quickly, I didn't want to do this as an entire story because we already covered this and it was just too distressing on so many levels. And honestly, this story is just, it would be a retreading of that. But one of the main organizers behind the neo-Nazi satanic sect Order of Nine Angles was apprehended, the alleged mastermind behind the whole thing. And listeners will probably remember how affecting that was to all of us. It involved coercion of young people on the internet into videos of self-harm, rape fantasy type stuff, just absolutely abominable things on Discord and Telegram. And I believe officers in Hawaii and Honolulu served a warrant to raid the home of an individual that is thought to be the leader of that group. So that person is now in custody.
Check out our episode, several years old now, on the Order of the Nine Angles. It does hold up. You can hear us mention them a couple of different times throughout the life of the show. I like that. I'm glad to hear. Hopefully justice will be done. Also, AI has a gift for you for the holidays, folks. AI may just save humanity from super bugs. That's right.
Well, that makes sense. Modeling type stuff. Yeah.
That's right. Scientists are discovering the first new antibiotics in apparently over 60 years through partnership with AI. This means that one of the ways the world could end, shout out to our buddy Josh Clark in our earlier episode on super bugs, which is weird hearing post-pandemic. This means that there may be hope. There may be a way to fight these things that are statistically inevitable. And speaking of statistically inevitable, we hope it is statistically inevitable that you write in with your thoughts. Folks, what do you think about the rise of cyber attacks? Are there more happening more frequently, or are we just more attuned and more likely to pay attention to them? What other animals may evolve? How do these environmental pressures work, and how will they drive evolution? And then, of course, tell us about Operation Prosperity Guardian. We're very curious. We're easy to find online as well.
That's right. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on X, YouTube, and Facebook, where we have our Facebook group, Here's Where It Gets Crazy. On Instagram and TikTok, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Why don't you give us a call? 1-833-STDWYTK. You've got 3 minutes. It's a voicemail system. Please let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. And why not give yourself a cool little nickname? We'd love to put it in the system and know when you call. If you don't want to do that, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
the folks who read every single email we get. And be aware, we may write back. All you have to do is drop us a line where we are conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.